Welcome back to Untangling Web3.
We've got another great episode for you today, but before that, we'd love it if you could like the video and subscribe to our channel.
It's the best way that you can support the two of us and help the channel continue to grow.
And with that said, on with the show.
Today we've got something slightly different. So normally I might have a guest on, we would interview them, but instead I've got Alec in the studio with me, who is my guest today. I'm gonna be learning all about his new dApp, Restify. We're gonna understand, you know, what it does, what problem it's solving, and how he's built it. So very exciting stuff. Alec, I also noticed on the exciting news, you've got a nice bit of headgear on, if you wanna.
Yeah, well, we've talked about, you know, the Meta glasses, what they're doing in terms of like AI and smart glasses, and how they're pitching at basically the things you can see on my face right now being the future of mobile interfaces. I've got a pair. These are the Ray-Ban Gen 2. They're pretty epic. Like, I can just, you know, take a picture there.
Yeah, I was going to ask, are you recording me already?
So you see that they do have a light up here, and the camera's over here, so you can actually tell when I'm recording. So I've recorded lots of content of Jack when he's not known, and you can see he swears a lot. He's quite mean to me, and I'm going to share some of that on socials at some point. But I'm recording right now. The cool thing here is context, right? This is the big thing that Meta are pushing towards. Not just about bigger compute. It's the idea that AI right now is smart enough, but when it's plugged into the context of your life, e.g., it can see what you can see, it can be very, very powerful. And like, you have like the kind of the Siri style, hey Meta, it answers questions, it's getting smarter and more intelligent, but also you can ask questions about what's happening right in front of you, and it just gets the context instantly. It's so freaking epic.
Yeah, can you ask it to review the quality of the podcast episode we're recording right now?
It's only got a 3-minute window, and we have never managed to get any concise point within 3 minutes, so I don't think it would view us very highly in that sense. But you tested them out earlier. They're freaking cool. Like, little microphone, like, in basically, they have like a vibration based sound, so you can't really hear too much outside. It's really cool.
Yeah, I must admit, I was, you know, our episode talking about it, I was more of a skeptic. But seeing them in person, I'm actually starting to get won over a little bit. I think, if nothing else, it gives us a new angle for this show. So maybe we'll splice some of that footage you just took into the episode. But yeah, maybe we'll come back to the Meta glasses in a few weeks' time for a full review when you've played with them properly. But yeah, let's stay on topic. We're here to talk about your enterprise dApp startup. I don't know what to call it. Are you the CEO of Restify? What is this?
It's really weird. I guess like one of the cool things about Web3 is it cuts through a lot of the red tape, right, and yellow tape and all this kind of stuff, is that you typically can bootstrap an idea very quickly. And that's what we've seen, talked about things like NFT projects and meme coins and all this kind of stuff. And the fact that you can create $1 million, multi-million dollar, even $1 billion network instantly without, say, the classical kind of like filing companies, working out where you're based, hiring people, is a superpower of Web3. And you know, we've talked about VBetterDAO a lot and how that kind of adds to the experience of being able to bootstrap an idea and specifically an X2Earn dApp very quickly and build out a community very quickly. So I guess right now it's a dApp. I'm one of the creators, like one of the contributors to it. It's an idea that I've wanted to work on for a long time. And the premise is basically around cutting screen time right now. Like, I think we're kind of all aware that there's a mental health crisis, and we're pitching Restify as one of the first Web3 dApps to kind of help alleviate some of the problems of the current mental health crisis.
It's just to the kind of first point, it says a lot, I think, that I don't know exactly how to classify what you're doing, because the barrier to entry to doing something in Web3 has become much lower. And yeah, it's like, it feels like it's somewhere between what would traditionally been a business. You're solving a problem, you've built something, you've got a team around you, I presume. But you know, you can just launch this on a network like VeChain very, very quickly, right? And it's quite different to how you would have previously, you know, built a business. But we'll get on to kind of, I think, the machinations of how you did this in a little while. But yeah, let's dig into kind of the elevator pitch. So you said it's around cutting screen time. Why was that kind of, what is the elevator pitch for Restify beyond that? Like, why is that the problem that you decided to focus on, and how are you solving it at a high level? And then we can dig into it deeper.
So like, the pitch behind, okay, all solutions are obviously based on a problem, and I see a problem right now. I think we all see a problem. Like, we're heavily invested in the tech space, and we're often talking about AI, and is it going to be a force for good? Is it going to be a force for bad? Is it going to make people more addicted to the technology and kind of less connected to humanity? Like, even these very specs that I'm wearing right now, we have the exact same conversation. Like, is this going to disconnect us from our mobile devices, which is good? Or is it going to make it, you know, 100% of our lives constantly because they're so much more seamless?
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about that problem a lot. It's like, what does the future of humanity look like? And we talk about social media a lot. I think social media overall has had a massive negative impact on us as like a species, us as humanity. Like, some of the stats that, you know, typically pull out to focus on the problem is over 1 billion people every year suffer from some kind of mental health illness. And like, if you move away just from like the ethical implications of that and look at purely the financial impacts of that, over $1 trillion is lost every year through lack of productivity, purely through anxiety and depression. And that's for like, you know, dropping productivity, like I mentioned, you know, missed days of work through, you know, illness, all this kind of stuff. So it's a huge problem, and it's a growing problem. And I think that there's a massive market for this. Like, mental health tech has boomed in the past like couple of years, like $450 billion. But I think, similar to like Bitcoin and crypto and generally Web3 technology solving the problem of coordination at scale, I don't think this can be solved through a top-down approach. I think the best way to solve a problem like this is a coordinated, decentralized effort of individuals being nudged just a little bit through things like micro incentives in the right direction. And that's kind of the problem that we're trying to solve at Restify.
Yeah, I think it's very compelling. And I wondered if maybe, you know, I know you've spoken to me plenty, you know, off air about this, but obviously we've had plenty of episodes where we've also talked about the mental health implications of technology. We had Dr. Annie Zimmerman on the show, which was very, very eye-opening, you know, as to both the problems caused by technology and some of the, you know, potential solutions, as I think this could definitely be. I think it's a very, very compelling use case for the micro incentives. You know, you mentioned it's one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite aspects of Web3, and one of the things I've been talking about, you know, banging on about since episode one is micropayments, microactions.
Was it episode 1 or episode 2 that we actually talked about micropayments?
Yeah, maybe 2 or 3, I think we did. Welcome to Untangling Web3, blockchain, micropayments, because it was high on our agendas. And this is exactly the kind of thing. It's about like creating responsible behaviors or impactful behaviors through small everyday kind of actions. And I think, yeah, this is a huge problem. I was going to say, I've not actually used the app, I have to say, because, you know, when iOS, I'm waiting for the iOS version. It's only on Android right now. So I haven't actually used it, but I've looked at, you know, the app itself. I've looked at the screenshots and everything. And it looks to me like, you know, if I was to do an explain it like on 5 version and completely oversimplify, I would say it looks like a kind of Pomodoro timer, if anyone's familiar with. So the Pomodoro technique is when you kind of time box work and focus sessions into like 25 minutes or X amount of time. You start a timer. So that is one, like, you know, time-based focus sessions.
Exactly.
But then another thing it reminds me of is something I've recently bought, which is a brick. Have you seen the bricks?
Which is crazy. The idea of people paying like, was it $20-$30 for this external piece of kit that shuts down your phone? Yeah. Like, I don't know. I did a lot of market research about how, like I say, $450 billion is the current market size of mental health dApps. And like, I think digital detox is around like $30 billion, $40 billion, like specifically digital detox and removing it from technology. And you look at all the ways that, like, things like brick, where you buy this external piece of hardware just to stop you from using your phone for a little bit.
Yep.
Like, I find that bonkers. Like, surely it can be simpler than that. And that was one of the things that we tried to push is simplicity, is making it as easy to use as possible. Anyone can do it instantly. But I think one of the things we saw with a lot of the competitors as well is it's always negative. It's always like, you put some money up and you lose it if you don't, you know, play with your phone or something like that.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, you get some kind of penalization or something. And I think that there's something to be said for positively rewarding people as well. And like you say, like, it's a really boring characteristic for a lot of people, the idea that blockchain technology and cryptocurrency allows micropayments. You're like, okay, that's just efficiency. But you and I both know there's so many economies that can be built up over the concept, and like new economies as well, of the concept of micro incentives and micro payments. And I think this is hopefully just one of them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the reason I bring up Brick, because I've recently become a user, is to highlight, again, how big a problem it is. Yeah. I have got to the stage in my life where I think, oh, I could, you know, this could benefit me. And I've read a lot around kind of habit formation and designing your environment around building habits. And that's why I think, you know, having a brick, for anyone who doesn't know, yeah, it's like a physical NFC chip in a brick that you place around the house, and then effectively, you know, lots of people have used the screen time functions on iOS, I think, where you can ban, you know, your use of apps over a certain period of time, but then you can easily just, you know, remove that restriction, right? With the brick, you have a physical barrier. And the reason I've used it is I can ban everything that I might scroll on when I wake up. So I have to physically get out of bed as a trigger. But anyway, the point is, yes, you're right. There should be a simpler and better solution than this, because A, I'm restricting myself. I've had to also think about how I set up, you know, my life around the brick, what's going to ban at certain times. It adds more cognitive load, and if I go away and don't take the brick with me, then I've hampered myself, right? So I like that you're approaching it from an incentive based rather than a kind of penal system, right, where you're penalizing the user by effectively banning the apps or banning what you're doing on your phone.
And I think one of the things you mentioned there was the idea that, okay, phones are now making it easier for you to track your phone usage, and maybe, like, if you can track it, then maybe you can do something about it and start to reduce it. But there's also, like, they're incentivized not to, right? At the end of the day, they want you to use your phones as much as possible. Like, if I'm using my phone for less than 10 minutes a day, I'm not going to be buying the new sexy Samsung 28 or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, like, they allow you to track, but they're not really gamifying it for good right now. So I think one of the ideas we came into this with was simplicity. Like, if we're giving microtransactions, then there's got to be micro friction as well. You can't expect someone to change their entire life with a tiny payment, right?
Yep.
But they will make tiny little nudges, tiny little improvements if you're giving them a tiny bit of amount of money as well. So, like I say, there's a big mental health problem. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think one of the biggest reasons in my mind anyway is the idea of phone addiction, social media and all this kind of stuff. So we started with the idea that we can help reduce phone addiction specifically and phone usage specifically. Mm-hmm. And the goal then is to build it out to a full Web3 mental health app, basically. But yeah, it's going quite well.
Yeah, very cool. And I think it's very inspiring that you've picked it up alongside everything else you do. I don't know where you find the time, to be honest. It puts me to shame. But yeah, so my understanding of how it works on, like, a not a technical level, but just kind of a user level, is it functions or looks a little bit like one of these Pomodoro timer apps that you can get, where you'd start a session of 25 minutes and then, you know, when you're finished, you go back on it. But those old timers, you know, there's nothing special happening there. You have to kind of force yourself to do it and comply with your own rules that you've set up, basically.
Exactly.
So, yeah, what am I doing with Restify? I'm starting a session. It does what to my phone, and then I get paid what at the end of that?
So, that's like, the idea, one of the big things here is, and I think this is a real value add of Web3 generally, is as soon as you, like, Web2 data is rich, behavioral, great applications, but easy to fake. Web3 data is hard to fake, trustworthy, but usually quite narrow and very focused on finance, speculation, that kind of stuff. I do imagine a world, like, you know, to come full circle, a world where we have rich, authentic data. And I think when you're talking about things like AI and how you get, like, personalized super intelligent things like that, you need a combination of both, like, trustworthy rich data. So to come back to your point, like, when we are giving value to actions, like, I'm rewarding people and I'm giving money for some action.
And when you say rewarding, as in, like, I as a user, I sign up and I use the app, I do a session of, I don't know if there's, like, a specific minimum length I have to do.
It's 15 minutes. So minimum is 15, up to 4 hours max.
Yeah, and then you get paid in the V better token.
You get paid in better tokens. So you get incentivized, like, microtransactions. So, like, say per minute you lock up or per second you lock up, you're being given some microtransaction. Right, yeah. So, for example, I locked my phone for 2 hours yesterday, and I think I got the equivalent of, like, 5 better. So it's like 30p or something like that in, like, real dollar terms or real penny terms, I guess. But the point here is that we couldn't just say have a trustless basis where I will build an app and then someone says, yeah, I locked my phone for 2 hours, give me some money. Because all of a sudden, like, as soon as the money involved, people take advantage of the system.
Yeah, well, one of my first thoughts, I've recently upgraded my phone. I had, you know, some iPhone from about 6-7 years ago. And I thought, oh, I've got it when the iOS app comes out. Why can't I just download Restify there and use that
on the side?
On the side, yeah.
Well, that's a good point. Like, one of the things, and at the moment, like, you potentially could do that. Yep. Like, one of the things we are looking at is how to device fingerprint and how to make sure that it's like one person, one device, so they can't do those type of things.
Yeah.
But like, you weren't there, but had Oleg on the conversation, obviously, like the founder of Sweat.
Yeah, yeah.
Sweat super successful project, like, kind of invented the idea of X2Earn apps and like hugely successful, lots of users. He said one of the biggest things is, as soon as you're giving money away, like, there's power there because you know that maybe that you're incentivizing people to do things they wouldn't otherwise do. You're changing behaviors and in a way creating value. So his thing is, like, around health, it's quite obvious there's a healthcare epidemic as well. Like, the NHS is costing, like, spending billions on people with health issues that could be resolved through like healthy eating, healthy movements, all this kind of stuff. So in pushing people to do something like go for a walk or go for a run, increase their step count, you're reducing the burden on society. So you're creating value, saving money for the government, for individuals. And the way you do that is to micro-incentivize them. But, you know, value being created, you're also giving value. A lot of people are abusing that system, pretending to do steps.
Yeah.
Like he was talking about, you know, people put in step counters on dogs and all this kind of stuff, just to up their steps and make money.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, when you kind of come into it, you're like, oh, it's a great idea. Let's just do this. Like, no one's going to take advantage. And then a couple of weeks of learning, you're like, oh, okay, people will try and take advantage of this.
You get the adversarial mindset very quickly.
Exactly. Yeah. But like, so our system, the way we do it is, we're plugged, it's quite simple. Like, we're a native app, so we're plugged into your Android, just Android supported right now. We plug into your app permissions. And you're basically, when you're using your phone, you're app usage is sent to the back end, the native code. So I know the native code knows what you're doing, like per second, what apps you're on. So when you go into a lockup session, you basically approve us to see what's happening on your apps in the background.
Yeah.
And as long as you haven't used any apps from the start time to the end time, you get rewarded. And it's as simple as that.
Today's episode is sponsored by the VeChain Foundation.
Now, we often talk about how emerging technologies like blockchain have the potential to revolutionize sustainability. And VeChain is at the forefront of this green movement with initiatives like VBetterDAO. Let's take a closer look.
Imagine tracking small actions like recycling at low cost, making them valuable assets. These verified records build a massive collective impact, benefiting people through their own actions. Sound a bit complex, but VeChain made it fun. Explore our apps at VBetter.com.
VeChain's goal is to power a new era of sustainable solutions. So if you've got an app idea or just want to earn rewards for small, sustainable actions every day, go check out vbetterdao.com to find out more. And now, back to the show.
So it's not actually like bricking your phone in the way my brick is. It's not. It's not disabling access. You have to actually follow through on your promise to yourself, right? Interesting. Okay.
This is why you need that positive incentive, right? Typically, people are doing it for the money and they know that if they do use an app during, they won't get the reward.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if there's, I'm not a psychologist, but shockingly, but I wonder if there's some kind of difference there, because it's in, you know, the analogy is in the old world, what I described earlier, you're physically, there's a barrier in the way stopping me. What's going to happen in your case is that there's no barrier. You can essentially break out of your focus session at any point as a user. But then you're going to remember at some point later, you're going to go, oh, I lost out on money there. I left money on the table for doing that.
Yeah.
So it's like a different stage
exactly.
in the cycle that you're disrupting.
And I think,
guess,
people respond differently to different things. Like, I think the idea of spending £30 upfront for like a brick or something like that would put a lot of people off. Like, it would definitely put me off. Well, I think I personally respond better to positive reinforcement, the idea that I can make money from doing this thing.
Yep.
But yeah, it's early stages. Like, right now we've been around for 3-4 months. We have around 15,000 registered accounts, something like that.
Very impressive.
Yeah, like done 250,000 transactions on chain. So that's over 250,000 now. Individual sustainable sessions that have been like verified and proved and been rewarded for. I think one of the coolest stats is we've saved around 160 years of screen time, like verified screen time to date, which is bonkers. There's like 86 million minutes has been saved in the Restify app. Like, it's just, it's kind of like the stuff we talk about. I know we keep saying like NFTs, like meme coins, all this kind of stuff. Like, but you can bootstrap and build a project so quickly with Web3 technology. Like, it cuts away so much of the red tape. Like, if I wanted to collaborate with people around the world very quickly, like, we have ambassadors like all over the world that are helping. You'd have to sign contracts. You'd have to work out how to pay someone like in a different country. But Web3 just cuts all that out. Like, the kind of, like, you can enshrine the rules immediately and have people signing up and being rewarded in tokens because of Web3. And I think that has allowed us to build really quickly and grow really quickly.
It was very much the build in public mindset, right? Like you build in public, you put things out quickly, you get user feedback quickly, you iterate quickly, right? Yeah. It's the new model you see a lot for startup design in 2025 and the last few years. I think I want to park the myriad ways that people might attack this for now, because you said the second phone, for example, how you tie that. We've talked loads about digital identity already on the podcast, and I think there's definitely elements in there, but maybe we'll come back to the attack vectors later. I'm interested in this value creation concept because, one of my very first questions around this when I saw that you're building it was, okay, great. If I'm getting paid, you said 30p for a few hours lockup. It's around that kind of ballpark. I was like, wow, that could stack up to a lot of money very quickly that is being paid out, right?
So we've paid out 30,000 US dollars, equivalent, in the past 3 to 4 months.
Yeah, which is, again, great achievement. I'm very impressed with that. But my question is kind of, where does the incentive for you as the DApp come from to pay out, to source those funds and pay them out? Because the value creation, as you mentioned, might be for someone like the NHS, right? Or for employers who, get more productivity out of people. And in NHS's case, or the health services case, they're not having to treat as much, potentially, if this solves the problem at its root. So, I understand the value created there. But how does then that get communicated back? It's kind of almost like happening in reverse, right?
I get what you mean.
Before the value's been created in society downstream, you've got to kind of bootstrap it.
Exactly. I think you can't go to the NHS with 10 users. No one's going to take you seriously, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of these things, it's kind of a chicken and egg in that the beauty of Web3 is you can build and test very quickly. But sometimes you kind of, you need to get the users and the volume before, say, an NHS will take you seriously.
Yeah.
And you need to proof it out. And I think that's kind of where we're at. I think in terms of monetary creation, one of the beautiful things about VBET DAO and crypto is you can bootstrap a project quite quickly. Mm. We get a weekly allocation of these beta tokens. And as you know, crypto, if you believe in the project, you believe that it has long-term value, then the value of that token obviously goes up, right? So that's one of the beautiful things about crypto and us basing our project on crypto.
Yeah.
In terms of value creation, there's a lot of different streams, I think, for monetization. Right now, it's very simple. We're just trying to build users, kind of test things out, make sure everything's working, a core value prop. And then the goal, like I said, is how do we become a Web3 mental health app? Push from just detox from the phone to start to do mood logs, to start to say, use the audience then to push people in certain directions. I have the plan of whitelisting certain apps. So say 2 hours away from a screen or 2 hours doing a meditation session or a yoga session.
Yeah, yeah.
So all of a sudden you're starting
specific habits.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden you're starting to push people to specific habits. And as long as it aligns with our core value, probably not selling our souls, that you can go use Twitter for 2 hours and it's actually good for humanity, a car map or something like that, or some audio book or something, then there's partnership creation there, right? You have a funnel and maybe you want to partner there. Another thing is obviously the mental health side. I genuinely think we're quite early to the game. The idea of actions having value is quite a new concept. I think we're seeing it for physical actions, definitely. Vitality. We were both on Vitality at the same time. That is bonkers. In the last 5 years, you've seen that really take off, whereas if you're proving using a smartwatch that you go for runs, your heart beats above a certain percentage or a certain number of beats, then your premium comes down because, again, value is being created. Push it to the user. I think we're going to see the exact same in mental health. I think in the next 5 to 10 years, people will start to take this space seriously, and there will be Vitality kind of premium reductions or health insurer premium reductions or NHS incentives for people that are doing healthy habits when it comes to mental health. And I think Restify could be one of those apps. Prove that you're doing meditation sessions. Prove that you're reducing your screen time. We'll reward you for it. And I think that's a longer term play, but I think there really is something in that.
Yeah, I really like that idea. I think you're right. When you're talking about you need lots of users as well to be taken seriously, do you see that as kind of an end game? As in you'd have to partner with one of these big, an insurance, a Vitality potentially, or a health service? Or is it way too early on to know that kind of thing?
I've thought about it a lot. There's two tracks. One is we have advanced offerings in the app, right? Mm. We're obviously going to push down the AI and mental health like app, like having a wellness kind of support thing.
Yeah.
And that could be a premium service. You pay like £3 a month and you get all these extra features. And that kind of keeps revenue coming in internally.
Mm.
The other stuff is like, it's a lot harder, right? Like you have external dependencies to say partner with certain products, partner with certain communities, partner with the NHS. That is a longer term play, but we're going to build out both functions, the internal revenue generation and then the external partnership and revenue generation as well.
Okay, yeah, interesting. And just maybe to highlight, because I think it happened quickly in the conversation, but I think it was profound, is that because it's being funded by the Better token and things coming in through the VBetter DAO,
yeah.
That, am I right in thinking that means that can be then funded, what you're doing can be funded by anyone by depositing those tokens, is that right, from the community?
Yeah, so the way, like in the same way that, say, Bitcoin creates tokens for some, you know, output for hash power, like when mining is created, you have new tokens being generated. Mm. VBetter DAO is a similar program, but for X2Earn dApps, right? So when you're voted in by the community to be one of the X2Earn dApps that is getting a weekly allocation, tokens are generated each week, and then the tokens that are generated are split between those registered dApps based on how many votes you get. So Restify right now gets about 1% of the votes. There's 3.7 million Better tokens that are given every week, and we get our allocation to basically run the operations, run the team, run the ambassadors, and importantly, reward the users. So right now, and again, like one of the beautiful things is everything's transparent. The users, the people that are voting for us can see where that weekly allocation goes. So you know it's going to dApps that are using it properly and not just dumping it and making loads of money. So we quite transparently get our allocation. 80% goes to people using Restify that week for their sessions. So it's all kind of automated and how much you're getting per session. About 10% goes to ambassadors, endorsers, all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And the other 10% goes to operations like gas fees, marketing stuff, all the boring stuff as well.
Yeah, interesting. I was just trying to pin down where in the cycle can, you know, a wealthy benefactor or something come in and say, I want to fund, I love this idea, I love Restify, I want to make sure it succeeds. So is that purely in like the voting on the allocation of tokens, or is there any way that they could influence and like effectively invest to create more Better tokens to invest in you?
They could. Like, I think the Web3 way would be to buy Better tokens, get involved in the ecosystem and push it towards Restify specifically. I am always a big proponent of having revenue streams, like separate revenue streams, basically. And the idea of creating new revenue for the DApp specifically outside of just the token allocation is quite important to me.
Yep.
So I think like one, I talked about the two aspects, like internal, having users eventually pay for premium features, getting partnerships, pushing funnels towards people and proving like there's actual value being created. And then the third one is kind of more traditional Web2 mindset. Like if we're collecting this data on people, like if we know, I think it's really unique data in a lot of ways. And that's a beautiful thing about this incentivization scheme for a lot of the Web3 X2Earn dApps is when you pay someone to do an action, obviously that action has value for society, for the individual, but also you're getting, I think, actions that weren't there before, like data on actions that weren't there.
Yeah.
Like you've talked about Mugshot and all these other dApps that are out there where you're paying someone to take a picture of the mug. Like that's not data that was there previously. In the same way, we're paying to know what someone is doing with their screen downtime.
Which is another form of value creation, right?
Another form of value creation. Like that is not data that ever existed. No one knows what you're doing when you're not digitally connected.
Yeah.
So the idea of users, I think quite importantly, not just Restify monetizing this data on behalf of users and making money for ourselves. I think the idea of having this kind of collab of generation of money between us and the users, you anonymize data, then you sell it to, say, maybe big corporations eventually as well. I think there's a powerful thing there. And obviously, before we move to that, we'd need a lot around privacy preservation, user consent, all this kind of stuff to make sure they're okay with it. But again, that's another revenue generation scheme for Restify and for users as well, outside of just the token allocation.
Yeah, I'm interested to like, because that is, I think, where you might get, you know, pushback on the kind of selling the data or monetizing data in some way. And I think it's always going to be a push and pull, right? Where you have, you know, as you said, data being created that has value for insurers or, you know, any other kind of business that might have an interest, depending on what the action is. Again, something I've always thought is a good reason for doing this. It could even be like, I've always thought of it as like a customer engagement thing around sustainability. We've talked about the 20p recycling scheme and how like that could be expanded to build customer relationships with, you know, bottle manufacturers, Coca-Cola, for example, or something like that. Do you have a kind of gut feeling on how well that would be received, the kind of data market, because that's one of the only things that people have have a strong opinion they don't like in the world right now, and they're trying to move away from. And I just wonder if that.
I think right now the community is very Web3 native, which, as you'd expect, like the pioneers of this are obviously going to be the people that know about crypto. I think more and more the community is kind of growing past just the super Web3 native people to more Web2 users, is something we found, which has been quite interesting for us.
Yeah.
Basically, what I would say is there will be some people that will always resist, some people that will always be for. And it's going to be opt-in. Like you could say, this is super secure. I don't want my data shared. And then the other side is, if you monetize someone to be like, you can make 20p per session if you allow us to share your data with X corporation. Do you opt into that? I think you'll get a lot of people, like I personally would be completely fine with that. Especially if I have the options to be like, no data shared at all, anonymized data shared, all my data shared, and various increments between those for value. Like, let people choose. I think that's another beautiful thing about Web3 is like 100%. Let the user decide what they want.
Yeah, I think especially on when you've done the education piece around anonymized data and what that actually means, and all the things you could do with zero knowledge proofs, right? Yeah. And all the red and blue balls that come with those. If you haven't seen our episode on zero knowledge proofs, I recommend you watch that one for a laugh. I think you're absolutely right. And I always a huge proponent of choice in Web3. But if you need any more evidence that people will more than happily sacrifice their data either way, whether or not there's value being generated for them by doing so, then look at, the AI browsers that we're getting now, right? OpenAI just released Atlas. You can opt out of using your browsing habits to train the data, but there's going to be tons of people who either don't care or don't realize, are just kind of opted in, out of apathy or not knowing or understanding. So I think there's going to be plenty of people who love it and plenty of people who don't. So I look forward to seeing how you navigate those waters. Cool. I think I'd love to know maybe just a tiny little bit about the tech stack and like where it is now, like what have you actually put together to build what you've got?
Okay.
And B, like what has the process been like for you as founding this dApp?
Yeah.
The team you've got around you how the process been building it over the last few months? Like what has it been like?
So on the tech stack, like the core components are obviously like the native app, which has probably been like the most work. Because like I say, there's kind of, it's somewhat tricky to get permissions to access someone's like app usage. And obviously as soon as you're on like Android or iOS, like pushing to iOS, you need permissions and approvals. Yeah, and like as soon as you mention crypto or tokens, they're always like, oh wow, is this a gaming gambling thing or something like this? Right. So all, for example, like at Restify right now, is you have to be 18 plus to use it because there's tokens underneath the hood, which I get it. It makes sense. But there's like, it's a lot more rigorous to get approved onto the Play Store and whatnot. So there's the native app itself, which is main thing is just the functionality, the UI, how people interact, how they choose the times. But importantly as well, the permissions to know that someone isn't using an app when they should be rewarded. And then the back end is classic AWS, like how we're managing the database, the users. The other interesting things are around like the VBeth DAO interaction, like how we're rewarding people. So a big important thing for us and all of VBeth DAO is ensuring that the allocation you get is transparently sent to users. So like every single reward we send, I think it's like on average we send about 25,000 a day transactions to users, and kind of reward tracking the allocation in on a weekly basis to Restify Treasury, and then tracking the allocation out to individual users. All of that is transparently managed, so you can see every individual sustainable action that has been generated to prove that someone's not just dumping coins like swapping out. So yeah, they're the main parts. It's like the native app, the kind of the AWS infrastructure for users, storing all the auth sign-in stuff, all the boring stuff, and then the kind of the interesting stuff is around the reward allocation as well, and how rewards have been generated.
And like when you say dApp, I wanted to know, like, is the dApp side of it just distribution of the rewards? Or because obviously dApps can have like much more complex logic and commissioning things, and they're like, well, what is the actual role of the dApp in the...
Definitely. So I would say like maybe 80% of, maybe 90% of the code is traditional infrastructure. It's like AWS stuff for managing all the database, the underneath the hood stuff. And then like the 20%, which is the Web3 side, is just the rewards. Like, it's all just the tokens, like the treasury, how we're getting the allocation on a weekly basis, how we're outputting to users, how we're tracking what user deserves what, and that's all transparent. So like, it's not like 99% of our DApp is on in smart contracts and built in Solidity.
I actually like that a lot, because it's showing how much value can be created without having to be like, everything's got to be on chain, everything's got to be managed on chain. Of course you can make, you know, valuable things happen without having to do that, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's the most, I mean, that is the real value prop of Web3, right? Is the ability to move value around very efficiently. And for us, the value that's being moved around is the rewards for sustainable actions.
Yep.
So yeah, that's roughly the setup. And the other question was, what is the...
Yeah, the journey. Like, how's it been? You know, how did you go from the idea in your head to where you are now, 15,000 registered users and things?
Like, I don't know. I think being around VBetDAO and being around VeChain and like Web3 generally, we've talked about microtransactions and X2Earn dApps, and we both are big proponents of, okay, we think that new economies can be built around this, and we think there's such a powerful idea to push people in the direction that is good for them and good for society. And I was kind of just sat there for a little while. Like, I had the conversation with Oleg on Sweatcoin. I was like, okay, you know, that's quite a saturated market now. He's obviously like done very well for the X2Earn fitness app. But I was like, mental health is a big thing. Like, I think you should always build something that you yourself would use. And I know I use my phone too much. I know that like I have lots of friends that have had issues with mental health as well. I'm like, okay, this is a big problem that I don't think is very sexy to a lot of people. And it's like, it's a quote where it's like, you know, if you solve a non-sexy problem, you're going to make a lot of money or something like this. And I just thought, there is got to be something we can do. It's not too far to jump between, I see a really good X2Earn app for physical health, I see there's a big mental health problem, can I just bridge that gap and create a mental health DApp?
Well, there's not many people, I say not many, it feels like a criminally underinvested in problem as well, right? Even if investment has been increasing recently, I don't know the numbers, it feels like it doesn't appreciate the scale of the problem. So I think any investment in it is going to help, right?
Yeah, definitely. And then just kind of sandboarded with a few people, like Hugh Livingston, one of the guys that's working on it, Epic Dev. He was just like, oh yeah, I think there's something in this. Like, let's scope it out, work out what the market looks like, see how we could do this. And yeah, we've just been building it ever since. Like, I think the tech is one thing. One of the big things is community management. Like, when you build the community very quickly, globally as well, like, you also get inbound like 24/7, and like, it's always like, when iOS or why broke and things like that. And like, that has been the thing that I underestimate in terms of workload, definitely.
Well, I've learned a lot about it. I'm very excited for iOS. So apart from when iOS, what is in the kind of near midterm future for Restify and what you're building?
So like I say, right now we're all around phone digital detox. So it's just, we reward people for reducing their phone time. The next steps are, one big thing is gamification. So trying to like push people rather than just like statically, log in 2 hours a day, every day. We want to push people to constantly be growing and constantly be improving. So kind of like giving people streaks, giving people bonuses for going a bit beyond.
Leveling up.
Up. Like going a bit beyond like their current kind of just 2 hours a day and pushing them to kind of engage more and gain more value. A big thing will be around mood logs. So again, like I think there's a lot of value add to kind of work out what the impact is on someone's mood when they're digital detoxing, get that data and use it for something more powerful. I think it really adds value to collect people's mood logs on a daily basis and also understand like how that links to their phone usage. And then obviously the big one is how to build AI into it. So like we are pushing towards having like a Web3 wellness assistant in the app that can answer questions based on, I think, the unique data that is in the DApp around your phone usage, around your mood logs, and kind of help you be like the best version of yourself. And then obviously we're pushing towards iOS as well.
Well, I'm sure everyone will be happy to know. iOS is coming. When is undisclosed, but yeah.
This year, I think. I'm committed to this year. So this year we're going to go iOS.
2025.
This year, all the mood logs, all the gamification, hopefully the first version of the AI wellness assistant. And yeah, lots of other things as well. Like, there's big plans.
Well, you've got a lot to do, so I hope you are using the app and staying off your phone to get everything done. It's very weird saying, I don't know, I don't want to treat you as a guest. This is strange. But yeah, thanks for joining me, Alec. And yeah, thanks for listening at home. And you can join us next time to untangle a little more Web3.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Untangling Web3.
Don't forget to like and subscribe and to follow us on social media. It really does help us out.
The views we express here are our own and do not reflect the views of our employers.
And with that, we'll see you next time.